Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're going to unpack a really significant case today. Heck V. Reed, from North Dakota back in 95.
That's right.
Now, if you're tuning in, maybe as a law student, this one's particularly crucial. It really digs into how courts handle that incredibly delicate balance, you know, child custody when there's domestic violence involved.
Yeah, it really highlights the tightrope walk between, like, the child's best interests and these specific legal statutes.
So what makes Heck v. Reed such a cornerstone case?
Well, it confronts a scenario that, honestly, many in family law are going to see. You have a custody battle, clear acts of domestic violence found by the court, committed by one parent.
Right.
And yet, the trial court initially gives that parent custody, so it forces us to really examine, okay, how strong are these legal presumptions, and what kind of evidence do you actually need to, you know, overcome them?
Okay, so let's get into the details a bit.
Yeah.
The people involved here are Shane Heck, the father, and Chrissy Reed, the mother. Two kids. And, like you said, it's common. Both wanted sole custody. But the big complication, the trial court found Shane committed domestic violence against Christy.
Yeah, and it's important to understand the specifics the court found. We're not just talking about, like, shouting matches.
No.
The court documented actual physical acts. Shane pulling Christy's hair, punching her in the nose, twisting her ankle pretty badly. These were clear findings of fact.
Okay, so documented violence. You think, well, that's kind of it, right? Seems definitive.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Despite those findings, the trial court actually awarded sole physical and legal custody to Shane.
Yeah, that's the twist.
So what was their reasoning?
Well, they pointed to a few things. Shane's stability, the fact his parents were involved in helping with childcare, and then they pointed to Christy smoking, noting one child had asthma.
Ah, okay. So they're weighing these sort of general best interest factors.
Exactly. Stability, family support, the other parents' perceived flaws, like the smoking.
Oh.
Weighing those against the documented domestic violence.
But North Dakota law had something specific to say about that, right?
Yes, very specific. North Dakota Century Code, Section 14-09906.21J. This statute sets up what's called a rebuttable presumption against awarding custody to a parent who has committed domestic violence.
Okay, explain that. Rebuttable presumption.
Basically, it's the starting point for the court. The law says, okay, if you've committed domestic violence, we presume you shouldn't get custody. But rebuttable means that parent can challenge that presumption. They can try to prove with strong enough evidence why they should get custody despite the violence.
So it's not just like one item on a checklist.
Yeah.
It's the default setting. Carrying real legal weight.
Precisely. The legislature put that in there because they recognize the harm domestic violence causes kids, even if the kids aren't hit directly, just being exposed to that environment, the fear, the control, it's damaging.
Mm-hmm. Serious developmental effects.
Definitely. So this law prioritizes the kids' safety in these really tough situations.
So the big legal question that went up to the North Dakota Supreme Court was essentially, did the trial court get it wrong? Could they let these general factors, Shane's stability, Christy's smoking, just cancel out this powerful legal presumption against Shane getting custody?
And the Supreme Court came back with a very clear no. They reversed the trial court's decision and sent the case back down. They basically said the trial court fundamentally misunderstood how the law works here.
Okay.
They stressed that this statutory presumption isn't just, you know, something to be balanced away lightly. It needs a much, much higher standard of proof to overcome it.
Okay, so what is that higher standard? What did the Supreme Court actually require?
This is really the critical point. The Supreme Court held that the presumption against custody for the abuser can only be rebutted by clear and convincing evidence that the child's best interests require that parent to have custody.
Clear and convincing evidence. That sounds significant. How does that compare to the usual standard in civil cases?
It's much higher. Usually in civil cases, you use preponderance of the evidence. That just means more likely than not, like 50.1%.
Right. Tipping the scales slightly.
Exactly. But clear and convincing is a much tougher burden. It means the evidence has to be highly probable, almost to a moral certainty. So Shane couldn't just show it was slightly better for him to have custody. He had to prove it was highly probable or virtually certain that his custody was absolutely essential for the kid's well-being, despite his violence.
Wow. Okay, that is a massive difference. So they're not saying an abuser never gets custody?
No, not never.
But the bar is set incredibly high. Intentionally high.
Absolutely intentionally high. And Justice Levine, writing for the majority, really hammered home the legislative intent. Protect kids from the harm of domestic violence, full stop.
Full stop.
Even if they only witness it, exposure is harm. That really shifts things, doesn't it? It's not just weighing pros and cons anymore. The past violence is a huge risk factor that needs an exceptionally strong reason to overlook, based purely on the child's necessity.
So the trial courts focus on Shane's stability, his parents' help, and Christy's smoking. That just didn't cut it. Not even close to clear and convincing.
Not even close, according to the Supreme Court. They said the trial court got the whole framework wrong. They shouldn't have focused on Shane's good points in isolation or used Christy smoking to just brush aside the violence.
Right.
The burden was squarely on Shane to prove, clearly and convincingly, why his custody was essential despite the violence.
Did the Supreme Court mention anything about whether Shane had changed or if the violence might stop? The trial court seemed to assume it wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, they addressed that directly. The majority pointed out there was zero evidence in the record that Shane had gotten counseling or done anything to address his behavior. They called it clearly erroneous for the trial court to just assume the violence wouldn't continue. That really underscores how important it is, if you're in that situation, to show actual evidence of rehabilitation, accountability, not just hope.
Makes sense. Yeah. Now, you often get concurring opinions in big cases like this. Did other justices add anything?
Yes, absolutely. Chief Justice Van de Waal agreed with sending the case back, but he added a really interesting point. He argued that to rebut the presumption, the focus shouldn't just be on how good the abusive parent might be,
okay,
but rather on demonstrating the unfitness of the non-abusive parent.
Oh, interesting. So prove the other parent is unfit rather than just proving the abusive parent is okay.
Kind of, yeah. His point was this legal safety net, this presumption, should only be lifted if there's a really compelling evidence-based reason why the non-abusive parent can't keep the kids safe and cared for. It shifts the focus away from rewarding the abuser, you know.
That's a subtle but really important difference in perspective. Less balancing, more risk assessment.
Exactly. And then you had Justice Sandstrom. He also agreed with the remand, sending it back. But he did have a couple of criticisms of the majority.
Like what?
He felt maybe the majority downplayed the smoking issue, especially with the asthmatic child. And he also thought the majority was maybe a bit unfair in questioning the trial judge's motives. But importantly, even with those disagreements, he still agreed the case had to go back for a much tougher analysis under that correct, higher legal standard, clear and convincing evidence.
Okay, so let's nail this down. The key legal test established by Heck v. Reed is?
The core test is, finding of domestic violence triggers a strong legal presumption against custody for that parent. To overcome it, the abusive parent needs clear and convincing evidence that their custody is essential for the child's best interests.
Essential. Not just better, but essential.
Essential. It's a really high bar, much higher than just showing you're stable or the other parent has flaws. You have to make a compelling, rigorously proven case for why the child needs to be with you despite the history of violence.
Got it. So for the law students listening, what are the absolute must-remember takeaways from Heck v. Reed for their future studies or practice?
Okay, several key things. One, domestic violence isn't just another factor. It triggers this specific high level of legal scrutiny because of the presumption.
Right.
Two, courts can't just balance general pros and cons against domestic violence. The presumption must be addressed directly and needs that compelling evidence to be overcome.
Okay.
Three, remember, the legislative intent protect kids from the harm, even indirect harm, of domestic violence. Exposure is harm.
Crucial point.
And finally, four. If you represent a parent with a history of violence seeking custody, you need evidence of real rehabilitation, accountability, and that clear and convincing proof of why their custody is essential. Just saying they're stable now or pointing fingers won't cut it.
So wrapping up our deep dive on Heck v. Reed, the message is crystal clear. Really?
Yeah.
When domestic violence is involved in custody, the kid's safety and well-being are paramount. The law puts up a big barrier against custody for the abuser, and you need exceptionally strong proof to get past it.
Exactly. And it leaves us with a really important question to think about, doesn't it? Given this focus on protecting kids from the trauma, how should courts really assess the long-term impact of past abuse, especially when the child wasn't directly hit? You know, how do we measure that ongoing risk or impact?
That's a really thought-provoking point. How do we measure the unseen damage and factor it into the child's long-term best interest?
It's still a critical area, constantly evolving in family law. Lots more discussion and research needed there.
Definitely something to keep pondering. If you want to explore this more, definitely check out the full Heck v. Reed opinion and related cases. It's absolutely vital stuff for anyone interested in family law or child advocacy. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.